In the great city, you as one of its 50,000 residents might spend an evening playing the popular game Chunky. It's played by rolling a large rock across a playing field and trying to get your stick closest to it. And you might bet a copper necklace, a common thing, or a jeweled headpiece you owned on the outcome of the game, gambling being a common pastime. Ritual drinking included downing as much as you could of a caffeine-loaded drink, not coffee or tea, but something brewed from holly leaves called black drink, though your stomach would pay the price for it later. And that was actually part of the point, but bigger than London at the time, the city of Cahokia existed from 1050 to 1200 AD and was located across the Mississippi River from modern-day St. Louis. Now, life was challenging in this city, but the opportunities for trade, culture, and socializing made the sewage problems almost worth it. Like most great cities, it attracted people from far-off places, making it a stew pot of languages, customs, and identities. And the city covered more than 5 square miles and was made up of 120 earthen pyramids, often called mounds today. Built entirely of packed earth, the main pyramid, Monk's Mound, covered 15 acres. Imagine that. And for a time, Cahokia was the center of ancient society in North America, influencing the larger geographic region in countless ways, economically, culturally, politically. So what happened to Cahokia? Well, no one knows exactly. Political issues, a terrible drought, those things likely contributed to its demise. The point is that this place, the center of city life and culture at one point in time, was then abandoned, deserted, with just a twist in time. All that's left of Monk's Mound is what you see here, located in the Cahokia Mounds State Historic Site in southern Illinois. You know, I think back to those people who lived in Cahokia almost 1,000 years ago in this place we now call the United States. I'm sure as they made their way through the busy streets, concerned with filling their stomachs and making their way in the world, they didn't give much thought to whether this great city would be there forever. In their eyes, of course, it was permanent, lasting. How could they know anything different? And here we sit. Here we sit in this sanctuary, still reeling from the news of a shooting in Las Vegas this week, a shooting referred to as the worst mass shooting in modern history. We sit in this moment and it feels like we are caught in something permanent, something unchanging. So terrible it is alongside all the other worries we have for this country, for our world. It's so very terrible, so very real. And yet, when I can take a breath, and that can be hard to do lately, right? To truly take a breath. But when I do, I can try and pull myself back to see the larger picture. To see humanity's story, the twists in the timeline of our narrative, the places of surprise and uncertainty, the constructs that are given and taken away, the realization that so much of what we think is permanent is an illusion, that the stories we tell ourselves are not always the ones that are the most true or the most lasting. Now, one such story has to do with tomorrow, which is, of course, Columbus Day. And in the last few years, there's been a push away from honoring this Spanish explorer. Now, the reasons why are obvious to anyone who takes the time to look at the history. Most of us, at least most of us of a certain age, were never taught. Columbus never knew where he had landed. He stubbornly insisted his entire life that he had landed on the fringes of Asia, despite the fact that there were many who told him otherwise. He tried to make up for his failure to find a new trade route by becoming a slave trader. Upon his arrival on the islands of the present-day Dominican Republic and Haiti, Columbus's greed for gold set into motion a relentless wave of murder, rape, pillaging, and slavery that would forever alter the course of human history. We're talking about a genocide on these islands alone that some scholars say decimated 3 million people, including those who were inadvertently killed by the Europeans' unwitting introduction of disease to those native folks. And that's not to mention what colonialism, the doctrine of discovery, you know that idea, the idea that anybody who wasn't Christian, essentially, that their land was for the taking, however you got it. And that killed the population of the tens of millions of perhaps 100 million or more Native Americans with their cities far more urban, more populated, and more technologically advanced than most of us were taught. As Charles C. Mann talks about in his must-read book, 1491, Revelations of the Americas Before Columbus, we're talking cities larger than any modern city in Europe. Cities with running water, farming practices that included genetically engineered corn, and whole swaths of land modified, landscaped, and manipulated for the native people's use. This is a far cry than the images of simple primitive people living at the mercy of the land so many of us grew up with. And so with this in mind, we are called to acknowledge Indigenous Peoples Day tomorrow instead of Columbus Day. Indigenous Peoples Day is a day to celebrate the native peoples on this land, the people of places like Cahokia, the many native tribes who were slaughtered with the onset of colonialization, and those of Native American descent who remain today in the United States, often struggling to live lives of dignity on the 310 reservations in this country, reservations where many of America's poorest 1% live with little hope of working their way out of poverty, thanks to a very muddled legal and land rights system that leaves them unable to effectively enter the so-called upward mobility system that is the so-called hallmark of the United States. And so Indigenous Peoples Day is a day of celebration, of an acknowledgement of all that was here before, the rich cultures, the cities, the ways of life, the religions, the languages, so much and so complex that there is no one way of representing Native peoples, leaving old stereotyped images of Indians from movies and TV shows as hopelessly inaccurate and one-dimensional. Indigenous Peoples Day is a day of honoring those that are still here, who, despite the incredible odds, despite the ferocity of colonialization's mercilessness, are still in a shared cultural community in some form, small oases in an otherwise cultural desert. And finally, Indigenous Peoples Day is a day of recognition, a day of realizing that for all the good that this great country has achieved, for all the ideals of freedom and hope and promise, it has also been built on the backs of slaves, on the genocides of whole groups of people, on a level of violence that has found its way into our very DNA. The national discourse, as most of us know right now, includes that ongoing conversation about gun control, a natural and necessary dialogue pertinent after an event like the Vegas shooting. As if that conversation were not difficult enough, the deeper and even more challenging conversation to have is one about the violence in the very fabric of who we are as a nation. Begin a conversation about slavery, one about the genocide of Indigenous people. Watch how quickly many people try and deflect taking that in. That's a long time ago, they say. None of those people affected are even alive today, they say. As though the effects of such violence disappear after 5 generations or 10 generations or even 20 generations. Whatever you build your house on, that's your foundation. It will always be, unless you take the time to inspect your foundation and replace it bit by bit with something better. And you don't do that without coming to terms with the reality of the foundation that you started with. And so the Vegas shooter this week, it's another twist in our timeline, I think, but not an anomaly, simply a twist, a bend, a natural curl in the timeline of this land upon which we sit. It's not unexpected. It fits in with our violent past. It's reflective of that fact that there is still something wrong in our water. We still drink from the river of time, of history, a river that has all the wonder and ideals and justice of who we are, but also the pain and the imperialism and the violence. This week, I met with Reverend Mandy Yates, who I'm doing that LGBTQ service with this evening at First Christian Church in downtown Fullerton. And I came into her office on Monday morning, and both of us just looked at each other for a moment. No words were spoken. How do we go on? That unspoken question between us was in the air. Do we go on? Is this service we were planning for Sunday night still of importance? What matters amidst the violence of today's world? It's like that Blackfoot legend we heard this morning, you know, in our Time for All Ages segment. All those people starving because the buffalo had gone. A woman heard singing and stops and listens and had to learn the song from a magic rock so she could teach it to the starving people. And when they had the song in their hearts, they found hope again. With the hope, the buffalo come back. So that was Reverend Mandy and I this Monday morning. Two starving people in need of a song of hope. No magic rocks in sight, right? And for a moment, we didn't know how to listen for it anymore. But in talking to each other, we found it, faint though it was, but it was there. For we realized there was hope in carrying on. What we had planned to do the week before, a good thing, a thing of hope, a possibility of reconciliation for the LGBTQ community, that was still a good thing, despite this terrible shooting. The shooting did not take away the good we had planned. The shooting did not stop the singing of the song. The song of hope is still alive, and it's mostly on key. I hope you feel, among all the things you may feel this morning, I hope you feel hope. Because I do believe it is here. It comes from unexpected places. Again, maybe not in actuality from singing buffalo rocks, but from the little bends in the everyday moments of our lives. Hope comes from the shared exchange with another, from the knowledge that even amidst tragedy, there are those who seek to help. Hope comes from an abiding faith in the greater timeline of humanity's existence and the knowledge that this timeline is not a straight line. No, indeed. Rather, it is one that turns, twists, bends. But it does move a particular direction. As our Unitarian sage Theodore Parker famously said in 1853, "Look at the facts of the world. You see a continual and progressive triumph of the right. I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by the experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience. But from what I see, I am sure it bends toward justice." And we know that as he navigated the bends, the twists of time, that Martin Luther King Jr. himself borrowed that quotation about the arc of justice for the civil rights movement. And perhaps we too should borrow it again during these troubled times. Not just the shooting, but everything we are facing today. Because from what I too can see, from my very small perspective as one human being, the arc of the universe does bend toward justice. The arc of the moral universe of time itself is greater than we can see. We are caught, just like those people in Cahokia 1,000 years ago, in our particular world, and it seems permanent here forever. But perhaps all of it is just a bend in time. Perhaps some of the worst things are. We can't really know. All we can do is give ourselves up to the larger picture, to keep making what efforts we can to hear that elusive but still audible song of hope, whether it comes from a Buffalo Rock or those who rushed to aid hurt people in a Vegas parking lot. All we can do is what we can for justice, believing that we are in some small way, no matter how small, like trading Columbus Day for Indigenous Peoples Day, that we are contributing toward that movement, that bend toward justice. And when we are able to do all of this, we know that there in our futures, there will still be bullets fired, but perhaps there will be fewer of them, or perhaps we will be able to find our way through the grief they ignite more easily so that we can respond with effective and decisive action. Perhaps we will be better able to hear the singing of a rock, to dance with the mysteries of the universe, to better feel awe and wonder at the big picture, to more readily feel the tilt of the arc of justice. Perhaps if we can better find hope, then with it, we will find wholeness. Together we build hope. Together we build a future. Together we build a new way.